welcome to What the Bleep Are You Watching? A podcast where we watch a film and tell you why the bleep we watched it. I am Sean the Tank Engine. This is Thomas and the Mason Railroad. And we watched...
He's a really useful engine, you know. All the other engines, they'll tell you so. He huffs and puffs and whistles, rushing to and fro. He's the really useful engine we adore.
Thomas and the Magic Railroad.
Yay!
I'll be quiet. This is we are.
No, that was a genuine yay.
We are celebrating Thomas. This is we are celebrating Thomas as this is his anniversary. This is awesome.
Yes.
We love Thomas.
We do love Thomas. It's like one of...
Not this fucker, no, the train.
It's Thomas Tank Engine is like one of, like, a handful of things that we all, like, that we all know and that we all have a passion for.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really hilarious because it's meant for little bobbies.
Yeah. Look.
Yeah.
But any time we mention it, I think we can have like a 10-hour discussion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know all the brain diseases I got up here, but one of them sure loves the choo-choo trains. Specifically, the choo-choo trains with faces.
And British accents.
Model trains. I think legitimately that is probably one of the big things that I love about Thomas, especially old Thomas, is I love model trains. Like, mm-hmm. That is... Love them. And, well, you get to watch model trains interact and do things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is nearing the end of the model train era. There still be a little bit more.
This was right before, I can't remember, season 5.
Yeah, season 5.
And the last fully model season would be 11.
Mm-hmm. So we still had a ways before they would completely skip the models. But this is their... biggest attempt at anything. This is this attempt to capitalize on the popularity of Thomas, the popularity of Shining Time Station in America, which was also created by Britt Allcroft, and utilizing a few, you know, decent star power humans to try to really rev up that box office.
Yes. And rev up it did.
It got locked in it's locked in there with Henry right now. That box office is boarded up. Bricked up.
Gets bricked up so that it doesn't get scratched.
I actually did, and this is one of those movies that I missed growing up. Like, by the year 2013, not really going out to seek out Thomas movies. Really didn't get back to a Thomas passion for another 10-ish years. I was like, you know, had my own kid and was like, you need to play with the trains. Watch the trains. Here.
Be the trains.
Feast. Feast.
Meanwhile, I was -3 when this movie came out.
So you would have been prime age to watch it on a lot as a kid.
Yeah. This may have been like a VHS movie, I think, that I had. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this is one I watched a bit as a kid. I was very, very young when I watched this, so I didn't remember a lot of it, but.
And, this movie is mired, absolutely mired with behind the camera issues.
Yep.
I guess I'll round it up. Second movie I ever saw in theaters. So.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. I remember you said that.
I don't know that for certain. I thought it was the first one for a while, then my mom revealed, no, it was Ice Age. Oh. But I believe this was the second movie I ever saw in theaters. The Kid Who Loved Thomas. Yes, I was obsessed with this movie.
Oh, and this, like, we'll when we talk about the plot and we talk about the movie, we'll talk about both its problems and things that stand out for it. As a kid, I would, if I had watched this when I was in the major 6-7-year-old Thomas phase of my life, this would have been my life.
Like, that's what it was.
Like, it absolutely would have, because it has the models, it has magic, it has everything that would have been just awesome to watch.
And it has about. Alec Baldwin.
It has Peter Fonda. As Mara Wilson. Mm-hmm.
You know.
It was a weirdly stacked cast.
Yeah, for the three, and it could have been more stacked. There was a lot of big name actors that were approached or interested or considered before they kind of settled on a lot of these to do some of the voices. And I think in the end they decided to not let the budget get out of control and not have really any stars doing the voice work.
Yeah. Which I think in the long run was a good decision, like business wise.
Oh, and with the ability of hindsight and looking on what would happen in the box office, yeah, that's a good decision.
Well, yeah, because like Jean was bringing up earlier, to say this movie has behind the scenes problems would be an understatement.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly.
Here's the funny thing about the movie. It was a perfectly fine production. Alec Baldwin has gone on record saying he loved the production of this movie. So Peter Fonda loved the production of this. Mara Wilson loved the production.
Mara Wilson said that it was her favorite film to work on.
Yeah.
So many people loved the production of this movie. Then studios got it. And then the audience got it. And they did not like this fucking movie.
Yeah.
They did not like that it was more dramatic than they were expecting. They did not like that Thomas had a deeper voice than they were expecting. They did not like P.T. Boomer, the main villain, who they considered too scary for kids. So what the studios did and what they were forced to do, an entire half hour was cut from this movie. And that includes a lot of plot explanations and the entirety of P.T. Boomer, the main villain. Yeah.
And that is, I think, we'll really talk about it as we go through the movie. You can tell it needs a little bit more in a couple of plays. It needs a little bit more, and you know what would have probably fixed a lot of issues with it? P.T. Boomer, the main villain.
You say adding more to it. I think they just cut out the wrong 30 minutes.
Well, no, because I think a lot of those things consider boring or long are boring, more boring or more long because a lot of the explanation or the payoff for those things aren't there.
Yeah.
It's been a petition by Thomas fans and by Britt Allcroft herself for years to get the original cut out there on DVD. Almost got it for the 20th anniversary, but then a production leak version of it happened, which I do want to watch someday, but I didn't find the time. Mm. And that caused a whole bunch of legal issues, which means they couldn't release it. So
got all caught up in red tape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so needless to say, I think Britt Allcroft's still fighting for it to this day.
It would, again, it's one of those that, like, you know, if there was ever a film that needed a Snyder cut,
yeah,
the true cut of
the Brick cut, the Allcroft cut,
the Allcroft.
And I do understand. Like, again, I understand if audiences and saw it and thought it was a little too scary. I can understand maybe needing reshoots and maybe some different thing on it. I think I will never fully understand cutting the villain entirely out.
Cutting the entire main villain out.
Because, again, while Diesel 10 is an enjoyable, interesting, goofy villain who does attempt murder...
several times.
But at the same point, he doesn't carry the villain story of this.
He doesn't feel like a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And
no. He feels like the second in command. He feels like the Starscream.
What P.T. Boomer's Megatron would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And again, I have not seen the production cut. I do not know if P.T. Boomer's like the greatest character or whatever. He could be shit. I don't know. But again, just cutting him mm-hmm. out altogether is a baffling decision.
It is. And it's one of those that I think the movie, you know, and again, spoiler alert for this. I love this movie. Like this movie, even watching it as the first time as an adult, I love this movie. This movie was awesome. It made me smile oh so often. That is also the Thomas fan, and I have train covered glasses that are absolutely tainting train my view on it. Glasses. But that being said, you can absolutely tell the flaws that are there that would not necessarily resonate with an audience. That I wonder if. That I think the unfortunately the reworking probably hurt as much as just releasing the original would have. Like, I can't imagine that if, you know, considering what it made and everything it ended up, you're going to tell me the original wouldn't have made the same amount of money?
Yeah. I do think that's fair.
Again, production issues, this movie's layered.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably one of my most fascinating behind the scenes stories of any movie we've covered. And we've covered the goddamn Super Mario Brothers movie from 93.
In which I think we summed up, hey, there were production issues. All right, now on.
Yeah.
But I mean, if we talked at all about the movies behind the scenes issues, that would have been its own episode.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the same with this.
But yeah, it's got so many different things and a lot of different issues that led into it. But what we did get on the screen, I enjoyed, and I'm excited to talk about.
Critics didn't, but...
No, critics did not. And I can see it. Again, I understand a lot of the flaws. Like, we may be very mean to Mason, and Mason being the low end on it, how dare. I can see
the flaws are visible.
They are like, very visible.
Let's not beat around the bush. The flaws are very
visible. Mm-hmm. Very, very visible. But I think there is enough magic in this that make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but, I do think that's fair.
But anyway, shall we jump into the plot, or does anyone want to talk about any other side things?
I mean, I'll bring it up when we jump into the
plot. Okay. So.
Yeah, I'll reserve my overall opinions for the end.
Watching this movie with Thomas was a joy, because basically, you know, that the Two Towers, when everyone quote points out, hey, you know, Viggo broke his toe at this point. That was Thomas in this movie all the time, and it was awesome. Time, yes.
every viewing needs at least one person that's like that, I think.
But we get
you're welcome.
We get the opening credits, and Thomas gets his own billing right up there with our big actors, Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah. Pretty famously in the movie, Alec Baldwin is Mr. Conductor, who takes over for Ringo Starr and George Carlin from the original Shining Time Station
series. Mm-hmm.
I think everyone has their preference. Because I grew up with him, Alec mm-hmm. Baldwin is my preferred Mr. Conductor, but again, this is what I grew up with.
There is also an element that helps Alec Baldwin in this, and we'll get into there, is he is not voicing all the trains as well. The trains have their individual voices, which is something that they would start, especially in the CG and more era, that mm-hmm. the voices would happen instead of, you know, George Carlin and Ringo Starr just providing all the voices. And so I think there's some of that attachment that I have, that he is just telling, they were just telling the entire story and everything with them that will always attach. But yeah, no disrespect to Alec Baldwin in this.
Oh, no.
So we have Happy Life on Sodor, Thomas driving around. You do see a lot of kind of the iconic normal like path he takes at the beginning, but I kind of wish if it was just an exactly from the original like opening
the exact
opening themes, like I wish, or it was like a little bit more elongated, like, and you're like, oh, pointing Leo meme all the time.
I mean, they do straight up do like the bit with the water wheel. Mm-hmm. Like, they go back to that shot a lot, which
they
really do. Like.
There are a lot of the classic areas, because again, it's still the same, you know, models and things. But it was just, part of me was kind of hoping for a little bit more of that like original Thomas theme opening movie things that they would do into it. Maybe a more orchestral version of the Thomas theme, something else along those lines.
It gets there eventually. Yeah. It's just not near the end of the
They movie. Do get there, but yeah, it's kind of like one of those that it doesn't necessarily immediately draw you into the Thomas stuff, but then you see trains and yay. Mm-hmm. We have Thomas pulling in to one of the stations, and Gordon chastises him for being late.
Because Gordon's a prick.
Gordon's entire purpose in this movie is just to chastise Thomas. Like, that isn't entirely.
To be fair, is a lot of his purpose.
It's true. And again, with a movie, they did, and I think the right thing, they do pick and choose which engines get focused on, and it's Thomas.
I was going to say, it makes sense that the engine they focus on the most is mm-hmm. Thomas.
But
it's almost like his name is in the damn
movie. But, you know, Percy, Toby, and James do get roles in this movie. But mm-hmm. Gordon and Henry are just kind of resorted to a couple little flares, and Edward, whoop.
And Edward's fucking God.
Yeah.
Harold and Bertie have more lines than Edward, which I did find a little weird, but.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, remember in the Batman vs. TMNT episode where Mason had to point out a lot of the TMNT references? I'm going to be pointing out a lot of production issues in this movie. Because when Thomas looks at the sign, says Soda Railway, really reliable and right on time. There's a little note underneath it that says, sorry for construction issues. Guess what? That was a plot point that got removed because the T-Boomer was blowing up goddamn railways with dynamite. Why do you think his name was Boomer?
Yeah.
That's really clever, actually. I like that.
Yeah. One thing immediately here in this conversation between Thomas and Gordon that immediately tells you it's different from anything we've ever seen is they reference Mr. Conductor. Mr. Conductor is not just this, like, benevolent god watching over and just telling stories. He has interacted with the trains, and they say that Mr. Conductor is coming. Mm-hmm. And that is an immediately something. It is interesting that they decided to go with Mr. Conductor as the character, I think because of Shining Time Station, instead of trying to cast someone as Sir Topham Hatt.
I don't think that would have worked. The only thing I could see is, possible by speaking, the only thing I could have seen is like maybe a John Goodman as a Sir Topham Hatt.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, I don't know if I would have liked
that. That's probably the one thing that I would change about, like, I go ahead and bring it up now. Like, we see Alec Baldwin's character, we see Mr. Conductor, and later on when the daughter gets introduced, we see them interacting in the Thomas world. I think I would have liked it more if when they went into the Thomas world, they turned into little wooden people. I think I would have liked that more.
But it is something that the later, especially the CG stuff, will continue doing is Mr. Conductor. They would have cutaways. Mr. Conductor would do silly things, you know, for a kid's show. But anytime he talked to Sir Topham Hatt, he'd like pick up a phone and you'd hear. And so that actually all comes from this. This is the introduction of a lot of what kids now watching Thomas are used to. Like, this is normal stuff now, but this movie started a lot of these things.
That's true.
Diesel 10, we get introduced to. He comes blazing through, kicking up dust and everything. And
he's a big sort of, like, grayish-green type engine with a big...
So I think we said, when we did our Thomas tiers list, I think we talked about it there. The Diesel 10 design is so good.
He's
a very good design.
Really well designed. He doesn't really do much in this movie, though.
I mean, we'll get to that anyway. We'll
get to that.
And blazes through. And this is kind of where the movie, this early introduction, not bad, everything right here. This is kind of where the problem is with the movie is that it is two separate worlds that we have immediately trying to define. And everyone coming in knows the Thomas world already.
Mm-hmm.
They have to spend a lot of time setting up and talking about... Because as we go to Shining Time.
Because only Americans knew Shining Time Station.
And so we have a lot, like, a lot of characters are thrown at us, a lot of things happening. For our purposes, the basis is Shining Time exists, the conductor is there, they have trains going to and fro, but only the conductor really knows how to get to Sodor of Shining Time. And Shining Time is the connection to Sodor.
And I think that's probably something that I personally would change a lot about this movie is at first I was like, well, I would just cut Shining Time Station out completely and make it just Sodor, but I was like, that wouldn't really make sense. I think I'd probably take less of the focus off of Shining Time.
I don't mind the focus on Shining Time. I just wish it was still a little more Thomas oriented. That, like, not necessarily everyone knew, but, like, you know, there's more to it. Like, the Shining Time Station show was one of my favorite shows growing up. Like, that is, I had the Thomas VHSs, but PBS, I would watch Shining Time Station all the time when it was airing. Loved Shining Time Station. And one of the things was, it was basically, the woman is back playing,
Stacey Jones.
There we go. Stacey, I couldn't think of her name off there. Same actress from Shining Time Station. She's back. In Shining Time, basically, they have purchased and owned this station, and trains come to and fro, and she has a kid who doesn't know what to do and just eventually meets Mr. Conductor in the mural. He comes out and tells stories of Thomas. The thing about Shining Time Station is it's never really clear if Thomas is really real. Or if it's just this magical conductor telling them stories and things like that. It's a very fun little show. It has, then they have other things going on, things like that. And I think they maybe did occasionally reference to a train coming through that was named it, but you never see anything because it's just a one set pretty much show. So when you incorporate that up to a whole world here, which is what they're doing on Shining Time, there needs a lot of explanation for it. They just kind of gloss over some of the things because they are trying to – everything is focusing on conductor more than anything.
Mm-hmm. And, which, again, I feel like is also a product of that 30 minutes that got cut.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Because I think right here, if we were setting up the conductor and the villain,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the stuff would make a lot more sense, but instead it's just a lot of like, do you remember Shiny? And I mean, look, I'm full Leo pointing meme at all the cool Shiny Time Station stuff. It is interesting how the mural is only shown just a little bit when it is this huge thing in Shiny Time. It takes up whole wall and like, it's a thing. They like you see it a lot instead of just kind of like there, it's like all these trains coming in, but that's where the Mr. Conductor lives. And he's going to be going off to, Sodor.
Going to Sodor because Sir Topham Hatt's taking a holiday, so Mr. Conductor has to
fill in for him, which is interesting. Interesting way to take it. When we go back to Sodor briefly, we have James and a fly, and he and Thomas are talking about really being really useful.
In both capitalized.
Yep.
Really interesting. This is one of the few versions where the original is there. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And also the original voices of the characters, which were very different.
Mm-hmm.
Diesel 10 has a Brooklyn accent in this. He had a thick Russian accent in the original cut.
Which I think would have been better. Personally.
I think so. I honestly think it would have. One of the things, I don't think Diesel 10's voice is bad by any stretch of the imagination, but it is very, by the end of the movie I was going, it's very Jim Cummings, goofy, like, yeah, villain
voice.
It
sounds like Pete.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound very threatening in any way.
Thomas, I forget who did his voice, but I prefer his voice. It's deeper for one thing, which I don't need Thomas to have like fucking Christian Bale voice or whatever. But I do kind of kind of prefer him having a bit of a deeper voice because I know Thomas is kind of supposed to be a kid, but I've always kind of pictured him as like. Kind of an older kid who's just kind of.
I've always pictured kind of like that 10 to 12 range, kind of like that on the edge of teenager type of kid. Because I always picture Percy as the really young one. And then you have Thomas is the kid. You have Edward, who is like the teenager. And then Gordon and Henry are, I've always pictured them as being like, you know, what, an adults, but they're not really, like, not quite, they're adults in age, but not necessarily in maturity.
So what you're saying is Percy's Dewey. Thomas is Malcolm and James is Reese.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying.
Would that make Gordon Hal?
Yeah, I was going to say, no, Henry would be Hal.
Henry would be Hal. Gordon would be Lois. Yeah.
James was voiced by Michael Angelis, who was the British narrator after Ringo Starlin.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Michael Angelis' voice for James.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that was something we immediately noticed in this is James's voice isn't great.
No, yeah.
it's
sad, but it's not. I have nothing against the actress.
No,
she does a good job for what she's given. I just don't think the voice fits.
It feels James. It's okay if James feels a little like nasally and whiny, but it just I think it goes a little too much.
It's a little bit too much. Need to be dialed back just
but
a bit.
In this important conversation, we have Diesel 10 be back and kind of like. Menacingly and saying that he's gonna do all these terrible things and
destroy the magic engine and dominate the steam trains, which doesn't make any sense because destroying her supposedly kills the steam trains, but whatever.
Yeah. You know, we get information on the lost engine a bit, and then we go to the real world, and boy, do we get some exposition delivered to us by Billy. Is he the engineer?
Billy, the Native American.
Yeah, Native American engineer, and Patch, this kid who's going, this kid on a horse.
Who, we brought it up, but Patch maybe should have been the main character.
It's not as the main, Patch feels like the fill-in for you. He feels like the audience member. Like, he is the audience, like, we are seeing a lot of the real world through Patch, it feels like, a lot of the time, until Lily shows up, and then we kind of start seeing it more through her.
Lily, that's what I said the fucking actress's name earlier.
But,
I think if they, like, paired them up more with Thomas, and made their dynamic kind of similar to, like, the Detective Pikachu dynamic, I think that would have worked really well.
Again, yeah, and again, Patch is, he's just kind of, he's a blank slate. Like, he is really, he is kind of the link of this. Like, I compared him to an RPG protagonist in that Patch is Patch. He doesn't have a lot of personality. He just says yes and goes and does things.
Yes, he's the errand boy.
Yeah, well, I mean, credit where it's due. He's an OG. Like, the man will do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patch, go do this. All right, go do this. All right.
Patch, defuse the bomb. All right.
As you wish.
But we learn that he's going to go up to the mountain to talk with Burnett Stone. We get a little background on the lost engine. We get a little background that, you know...
Burnett Stone, played by Peter Fonda, he is one of the, like, five characters who could fight for the main character role in this movie. He's at least the one who has the most development, I'd argue. Going from depressed old man to not depressed old man. And one thing you'll notice about this movie is that the actors are trying really fucking hard, and you especially notice that with Peter Fonda.
Especially in Peter Fonda.
He is fully delved into the depressed man who lost the love of his life.
To the point where it feels like, and I made a joke about it before, but it does really feel like this, it feels like he's in a different movie for most of it.
Because the thing is, he really only interacts with children.
It isn't until he gets on the train at the end that it feels like, oh, he's in this movie.
Because the whole thing with Burnett Stone is that he lost his wife and lady, the train, in the same crash, which gave presence to the theory that the wife was reincarnated in the lady, blah, 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 blah. The man lost everything in a single crash, which, again, the original cut was caused by P.T. Boomer, causing even more rips.
This would make sense, and I think this is where we can really tie into the original one. Why does Peter Fonda's character feel so out? Because he's the only one in this tone. But if you had a villain in there, in the tone, and the real world was still more of this tone, it would make sense.
Yes.
But it's just him, because everything else is still la-la goofy Thomas silliness. Yeah. Like, all the tone is, like, whimsical, except when it's Peter Fonda.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, again, I don't mind it, because I think it's good because Peter Fonda's character is depressed, so it makes sense.
It makes sense in the character and everything in it. It just doesn't make sense in the rest of the movie's tone. Yeah, it's just very different on it. But we learn that, you know, as you said, Lady was crashed by a diesel, is what they say
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. If you notice, they're focusing on Patch when he says that, because they had to ADR it in. Because in the original cut, he says P.T. Boomer.
Yeah. So,
wow.
Yep. Oh, yeah, 100%. You can tell so much of that is ADR'd in. Like, because there's just a lot of shots of him, like, wiping down the train. And
Can you tell they cut out the main fucking villain?
Look, I really want to say, like, to me, I don't fully, like, there are some silly, goofy sexual innuendos you can go from some of this, because it's a kid's show and that happens in almost every kid's show.
Yes.
And Dirty Brains get a hold of it. But I want to say that I think the direction to Peter Fonda was, you need to make every time you're rubbing the train as sensual as possible, because that's what it is. Like, I think it's trying to portray a loving sort of thing, but it is very, like, he is caressing that train all the time.
I was gonna make a comment, but I don't want Thomas to kill me, so I'm just.
You still might. You have time.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you never know. But again, this may be a long episode.
I fully expect it to be one of the longer ones.
Peter Fonda, Burnett Stone's character. The thing that I do like about this character is that it is ultimately the story of loss with him. Mm-hmm. The story of loss and finding new family.
Oh, yeah.
It's, again, it would be a story that would be well told, but the problem is it's story number, what, six?
It is the story they push to the back burner. It's really like, hey, we just need here with Lady because we need to get the magic train eventually.
Because Lady is, I don't want to say a deus ex machina, but she's the MacGuffin.
Oh, she's 100% the MacGuffin. Honestly, the magic dust is also kind of a MacGuffin at this as well. A lot of the Mr. Conductor is a lot of it is, he's just, you know, there to, again, because Mr. Conductor was always just kind of a removed from narrator. So just throwing him into this and not really, like, changing a lot of things, it actually is one of the storytelling detriments of it, is, like, there should have been a little more set up for Mr. Conductor into the world with this.
Yes.
Compared, because he never was and really isn't ever again truly part of this world, aside from, like, little cutaways. It was a very different take on it, which, again, a take I like. It just doesn't always have the intended development for it.
Right.
When we go back to Sodor, Diesel 10 has no time for the names of his minions.
Instead of Splatter and Dodge, he calls them Splodge.
And legitimately kind of funny. I
accidentally invent ship names.
Yeah.
Which is not, I think, the intention, but that's what happened.
And one of the big reasons that Sir Topham Hatt is having Mr. Conductor come there is he does say you need to work with Diesel 10. Like, Mr. Conductor, or sorry, Sir Topham Hatt was nervous about Diesel 10 right now and everything. So partly why, even though he's going on vacation, he wanted someone there to watch is because of Diesel 10.
Because I think Sir Topham Hatt would have been, like, fine with letting, you know, the drivers and stuff like that take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that Diesel 10's there. So he's like, mm-hmm. Shit.
We find out that the journey for Mr. Conductor is getting bumpier and bumpier as his magic is running out.
Mm-hmm.
The gold dust, which, as Sean said, is MacGuffin number two.
Mm-hmm.
Sparkle, sparkle, sparkle.
We also have a quick cutaway to Burnett again, basically for him just to be like, I failed you, train. I failed you.
You want to sum up most of his scenes. It's him being really fucking depressed and shining his train.
Being really sad, shining down his train in a cave while sad music plays.
Now, all of this has happened. Now, let's introduce the main character.
What, 20, 30 minutes in?
Which is one of the narrative problems of this movie, is that a lot of it is tried to be told by a narrator, and then sometimes it just stops because...
Because the issue is, I don't think they knew who they wanted to be the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, the original cut they wanted Lily to be the main
mm-hmm.
character. But in the recut, it makes it like Mr. Conductor is the main character. Which would be fine, but then we focus on Lily for such a huge amount of time, and it ultimately feels... I'm the only one who's seen it. It kind of feels like Horizon, where there's like three different big plot points coming together, but the difference is that's a 3-hour part one of an epic. This is an hour and a half kids movie.
Mm-hmm.
an hour and a half kids... This is also because this is where they're introducing Lily, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just in New York City all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's just like, what the hell is going on?
They say, here is Lily. She knows magic because she sees raindrops and sees images in the...
I think it's more like she can see the magic where other people...
Yeah, that's what it is. But it is very funny the way they're just like, magic.
Oh, shit. She's her character from A Simple Wish.
And Gordon is angry at Thomas again. Surprise, Gordon showed up, he's angry at Thomas. And a couple of other there's a scene where we have a bunch of the engines around and they're talking things like that. And more or less, if I want to boil the scene down, it's legend tells of an engine, a lost engine who will save us all. It's the train. The fun thing about the original Thomas show is just the train shooting the shit. You know, they talk about things, a lot of things. And that's what this is trying to emulate. And honestly, this is where I really have a lot of fun, is when they're just kind of in the area talking about things. It's just funny being like, yeah, I got to go take these passengers back. But you remember when there was a magic engine?
Yeah, you remember God.
It's
one of those things. This is where I would have given Edward something to do. I feel like he should have been the one. Him or Toby, one of the older, like, wiser engines, should have been the one telling the story of Lady.
Yeah, I feel like this would have been, like, a good night where they're all in the shed and just, like, telling stories. There's several episodes that are just them telling stories.
Right. I really have to take these passenger cars, but do you have a minute to talk about our Lord and Savior, the Lost Engine?
We also do get Harold briefly, and even though he has one line, Harold's voice, or two lines, I think, one back, but Harold's voice is perfect. Like, my God, they nailed Harold's voice.
Yeah, they nailed that one line that Harold gets, or is it two?
It's. I think he says something, then come back, and then he says something as he blows, flies in, flies back. I personally really loved the voice. I would have loved more Harold, but that's the Harold fan in me.
Yeah, that's fair. You should have made it a Harold movie, damn it.
Everyone needs to be asking, where's Harold?
Thomas but, and the Magic Harold.
So anyway...
Harold in the Purple Crown. It's just Harold the helicopter.
So Mr. Conductor arrives. He reads Sir Topham Hatt's letter in Sir Topham Hatt's voice. Alec Baldwin doing Sir Topham Hatt's voice. This is the peak of this movie. This is so good.
This is exactly the same voice he'd use when he'd narrate the series.
Every time I read a letter now, I'm going to read it in the voice of the person who's...
I think the fun... we kind of get that the Mr. Conductor is a little odd.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a tiny magical man with no friends.
Yeah.
He's going to be a little odd.
Especially when you have the Shining Time Station set up. but you don't have the kid that is his, like, best friend that he gets to tell stories to. Yeah, I guess, you know, because it's later on, maybe the kid grew up and just forgot about magic, you know, head K, that he's just like, I haven't had a friend in decades.
That's one thing that I'll give Alec Baldwin, especially in this movie. He is really good at committing to weird.
And I think that's where maybe the conductor needed a little more, like, explaining to the world, because he just comes in and he is just a goofball.
Honestly, one of my favorite jokes in the movie. He puts on Sir Topham Hatt's hat and looks in the mirror and does Sir Topham Hatt's voice. And he looks, and the poster of Sir Topham Hatt is now pissed off.
And it's looking at
him. I love that the poster is just the wooden Sir Topham Hatt figure, the little figure. Yeah, and then a picture of his wife is just the figure of his wife.
That's another thing that I think they should have done at the end is like one of the trains comes in with Topham Hatt on it, and he comes out and it's the little wooden figure, and he's like, "What has happened here? Yeah, what's going on?"
And they don't acknowledge it. Like, they just treat it like it's a normal dude.
What happened here? And then Mr. Conductor's like, it's a very long story.
Which could have been like the setup to then, like, basically that's what he was telling the story. Like, it ends in, like, imagine, like, Alec Baldwin just sitting at, like, there, and he's got two figures sitting, like, there, and he's, like, recanting the story, and that's. And that's what happened while on vacation.
You threatened to kill Diesel 10 with sugar, it works in context.
So they go into the, the engines are all sleeping.
Yeah, the engines go into the shed. Mr. Conductor decides to sleep with them.
With his hat that on one side says thinking and the other side says sleeping.
It's a dual purpose. Thinking cat. It's resourceful.
Spoilers. Because of this movie, a lot of these actors are ones that I follow for ages. God, I love Alec Baldwin in this movie.
He commits. Again, all three of the main human actors commit very much in this. Every actor commits.
Billy, even though he gets like five lines, he's really dedicated.
He gets five lines, but they go to shots of him driving that train like four or five extra times. Like, it's important that we see him a lot. They set it up early, like he's going to be a really important character, and then he's never talks again.
I have a feeling.
Hey, guess what was cut out?
I was going to say, I have a feeling he was part of that 30 minutes.
Because there's an entire scene where, guess what, he interacts with P.T. Boomer.
That makes sense.
Of course. Anyways.
At the beginning, we see Mr. Conductor messing with a plant. In the cutout scene, P.T. Boomer hits that plant. So I like to imagine that in that universe, Mr. Conductor comes back. Oh, what the fuck?
Why you destroy my plant?
Oh, now you've really done it this time, and he throws the hat down.
Diesel 10 goes full villain and is a menace. He comes over here and he's like trying to destroy the shed, which is under repair. Cut out.
Yep. And
did he get exploded?
Yes, that way.
Exploded. Yeah, of course it did.
Either got exploded or don't quote me on this. I think they cut out that a huge storm had just happened, so it could be either or. Anyway.
Storm chasing Thomas. I'd watch that.
Actually, yeah, I'd watch the fucking shit out of it.
I mean, it's Thomas. We watch. But in fairness, we'll watch anything. Check out the rest of our Thomas videos from this month.
It's going to be a few. But my favorite thing is Mr. Conductor has to throw down his sleeping hat to put on his conductor hat to get into business. And he threatens to kill Diesel 10 by throwing sugar into his fuel tank. Which, yes, is a real thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely a real thing on it.
I feel like putting sugar in any fuel tank would take.
Yeah.
Well, yes, but that's the thing.
This is an important scene because it's basically Mr. Conductor revealing, yeah, I don't got my magic right now.
Yeah, because he tries to get away and nothing happens. And Diesel 10's like, oh, you're out of magic, twinkle toes. He says that a lot.
He does. I honestly like, look, the sparkle jokes in this almost always hit. Like, I like the idea that, and again, as we said, this universe, all of them know Mr. Conductor and have interacted. That's why he can tell all these stories, is because he's been there and he's talked with them. And I like to imagine some of the stories have been told to him by the engines, and then he's just recanting the day, being like, here's the stories.
He's telephoning it.
Yeah, like some of that. So maybe there's things. Then we get a scene that I'm interested, because it's his nightmare. And a lot of his nightmare feels like what would have been cut out and everything, because it's all about Shining Time being destroyed, and like, well, that ain't happening anywhere in this movie.
I feel like in the movie we get, it's supposed to represent like his fear if he doesn't get the gold dust back. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't add to anything because Shining Time is never really in danger.
Shining Time is not in danger in a lot of this. And this is, again, the villain was cut out, and this movie really needed someone on each world working together to mess up both worlds. It really needed that.
This is also the first time that we see Chekhov's falling bridge.
Not quite yet. Well, I guess, in the dream we do. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
Is it this one or the one he has later when he's laying down in the fields?
It's when he crosses the bridge when he mentions I saw it in a dream, but we'll get to that.
Also in this scene, Percy's freaking the fuck out because Mr. Conductor talks in his sleep and he's like, oh God, why am I the only one awake?
Percy only gets really used to freak out in this movie. Like he's said to be scared and all this
fair.
Is Percy. A lot of times they boiled down a lot of their engines down to their one knowable trait, which again, it's a movie. It's only an hour and a half. I understand why they did that. It's just kind of funny that, like, Percy is the scared one. Gordon is the angry one. James is the itchy-faced one.
They really turned Percy into Shaggy.
But also, Percy is the little child. Like, Percy is the little one. It makes sense. And I really the model facial work in this is so good. Because he looks absolutely terrified of whatever's going on with Mr. Conductor.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lily can talk to dogs.
As you do.
Again, I think some of the setup with Lily... Lily is an interesting character. Because it's just like she believes... she's a kid that just believes magic. Which I've always thought is a way you would tell... How you would tell Thomas is... We're all in the world where nobody believes in magic. Someone who does will see Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And it fits. It's just... They don't really do a whole lot besides like, yep, she see magic. And this dog that... knows Mr. Conductor and didn't want him to go is now leading Lily onto a train to Shiny Tide.
Because he got bad vibes.
Which
they do mention earlier that he and Stacey Jones both have bad vibes
for Mr.
Conductor leaving.
Yes.
Which, again, I feel like is something that they would have built on more.
Built on more if there was a villain on that side, yeah. Yes. It's just, unfortunately, that's just kind of a leftover side effect of, scrubbing out the villain.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make a game, put down a tally mark every time that we say likely in the original cut or was probably cut out. It's going to look like an insane asylum. They're just on the walls.
So the next scene is not much, but just,
what does the other 30 minutes mean?
We have a book being read, and it's called Romance of the Railroad.
It's being read by Peter Fonda. It's being read by Bernard Stone. He just pulls it down from his fireplace and starts reading it.
I wonder why people get a lot of weird train love between
Fonda. I just imagine that if this scene kept going, he would have started reading the book to Lady.
Honestly, I would have loved that if he was sitting like reading it out loud.
That's the alternate version of the scene they should have done. Is it comes to him finishing reading the book to Lady, closing it, putting it on the shelf.
After that, we get something that I wish we had a little more of in this. And that's Mr. Conductor interacting more with the engines. He's itching, he's scrubbing down James, specifically itching his nose, scrubbing him down. More of that would have been interesting, but this is really the only scene we get him really, really interacting with the engines.
Yeah. Do his job.
It's also really good green screen work to mix with the models. It looks really good. I love it.
And next he has to go to the windmill because that's where he thinks the magic will be.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the wrong place and he has to eat vegetables.
We're not quite there yet. He starts climbing the mountain.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
We have to climb a mountain.
And it's a really weird jump cut if it just goes straight to him climbing the top of the mountain.
Yeah. Diesel gets dusted. the coal stuff all falls on him.
And, now's when we cut back to the engines and they're talking.
They're talking, they're working on their stuff, and Thomas decides he's going to be really useful is what they're. There's a lot of little dialogue here and there, but Thomas is like, they're like, Mr. Conductor, where are you? I'm going to go find him. I'm going to be really useful.
Mm-hmm. We do hear Toby's voice here, and Toby's voice is one of the few that's like, oh, that's pitch perfect.
Toby is, yeah. I kind of wish Toby was a little more in this movie, simply because they nailed the voice, but also I think it would have, as you mentioned earlier, Toby being maybe the veteran, the person who maybe actually knows more about the old engine, knows more about engine.
He does get a scene later on where he fucks with Diesel 10, so.
Yeah, it's true. He's going to be really useful. Now, the Mr. Conductor, his brains, he's just sitting there, and apparently a rabbit left him veggies.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is just this and again, there are scenes where he talks to the screen almost in a, you know, kids, you know, young kids show.
Like a Nick Jr. show, like Door.
Something like that.
Very Blues Clues.
This feels very much like that. Like, and I think this is probably something they added in because of the darker tone initially. And they were like, oh, we need to make it a little lighthearted. Eat your vegetables and say, spout random words.
Which, not going to lie, part of me wishes that he went like full Hercule Poirot, like pacing around, cape blowing in the wind or whatever while he's piecing the mystery together.
It does the Sherlock thing where all the numbers float around him.
But he gets the idea, beach, I need to the beach. We go to the beach and this is where we meet Junior.
Yeah, the second of the conductor family we see, which is hilarious that that's just an entire family of, I guess, conductors.
Because canonically, all the conductors are related. They've all been related, and they kind of pass on. Yeah.
I didn't watch Shining.
That's not Shining. That's just been added on. Like, that's basically, like, in interviews, they've said, like, the creators have said, like, yes, the conductors are related. No, each one is not playing the same conductor. They are all different conductors.
So we meet Junior, who is the most 90s character in this. He is just short of like having frosted tips, and that would have been the most.
If this
90s
would have been a slightly more teenage adult film, he would have been smoking the gold dust here.
Because
that's what he's doing.
He would have been attacking the Mary Jane.
He's using the gold dust to just have a good time on the beach.
Mm-hmm. I always interpreted it as he was just blowing it in his sleep because he fell asleep with it in his mouth. But that's just me.
That's fair.
I refuse to believe that Junior is a user.
It's not even that. No, he's a user. I just don't think he uses the gold dust.
I think that's partly why, like, it feels like he's very flippant with the gold dust in those scenes. Like, he's very flippant, not realizing that it's running out.
Yeah. Also, he's drinking a giant ice cream sundae.
Yeah.
It looks delicious.
Some very interesting work they have. If I were betting, this is probably a very, very small set that they have then green screened him on to make it look like it's huge and everything. Probably. Like my bet is these are all miniatures. Like, that ice cream is probably like this big.
Yeah, probably.
If I were betting. It's cool. Again, there's a lot of cool technical stuff they did in this. Like,
the best part about this movie is the
technical. So many cool technical stuff.
The model work, the pretty good green screening for the most part.
Yeah, there was only like one or two times where I was like, ooh, that green screen. Like, yes, you can tell that he's not actually there because it's green screening.
Oh, yeah. But
in the 90s, but it is. It meshes very well.
And
I
for
love
the budget
it.
That they had. Yeah. Like, you. Yeah. It could have looked a lot worse.
Then Junior's shell phone starts ringing.
Yes, and it's
Mr. Conductor.
Mr. Conductor calling him on flowers somehow.
This is so weird. Like,
this is the one thing in the movie where I'm like, the one thing. It's very funny that in a movie with talking trains, magical railways, and God in engine form, this is the one part where I'm like, what the fuck were you on?
The thing about this is, while Thomas feels always has been magical because it's engines with faces talking, it doesn't always jump into, like, other magical things. Like, it doesn't jump into a lot of those. Everything still feels grounded and realistic, even...
Kind of the appeal of Thomas, if we are allowed to go on this rant, is that aside from the engines having faces, it's just a normal railway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they're just trains.
Yeah.
They're just trains with faces.
And I think that's where some of the disconnect in this movie is, it goes away from that into a lot of the more...
Yeah.
Magical stuff, which again, I don't mind the tiny conductor coming out like Shining Lipstick Nation. I don't mind him having magic to get to and from. I've always kind of believed Sodor was a magical place that you could only get to with magic.
Yeah.
Where Sir Topham Hatt works those engines like nobody's business.
But adding magical talking flowers and shell phones and everything, that's kind of where it's like, and it's a little silly.
We need a way to make sure these guys are talking to each other. Well, they could just, like, psychically... No, we need something that... I got flower phones.
What?
Flower phone.
But how is that... But how is Junior going to get the call when he's on the beach? Shell phone.
Yep, and it just... Okay.
See, I would have been very...
Now we have a pun.
Would have been very funny if it was a 90s cell phone, but it was properly sized, so Junior had to, like, climb it to slam his fist and answer it.
It's just a really big Nokia brick that he has to jump on.
Yeah.
How would he talk and hear through that if huge?
I mean, the speakers, he'd probably be able to hear it. He'd just speak in like this.
That'd be very funny. It was, sure, you know, I'm not going to say this isn't like, oh my gosh, this is what makes the movie bad or anything like that. It just, it's a very weird thing considering, and again, there's a lot of extra magic in this, but all of the magic aside from this feels grounded in a real world ideal.
Yeah.
Whereas this feels very...
At least it all feels tied into the movie's plot of the magic railroad that connects the worlds. This is the one thing where it's like, what?
Yeah. The dog gets Lily to get off the train and go to Shiny Time.
I was a little bit confused at this scene because I didn't see the dog go on the train. So I was like, how does the dog...
He took the magic railroad.
The dog can just teleport. I wouldn't surprise
me. I'm sure, again, in the original, there was probably more to some of this. But the key to this in this movie is that Lily meets Junior here.
Yep. Which is, again, kind of... fights again into who's the main character, because I mean it makes sense story wise why it's not Mr. Conductor, but for development it's like kind of think he'd be Mr. Conductor.
Yeah, it really feels like it should be Mr. Conductor. Like it really feels like it should be. I understand why, because they're trying to do the magic because running down they don't want.
Again, I actually don't mind Junior. I think he is a fun character.
I like the idea of a Junior type character. I just don't like the execution a lot of the time with his character.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a great thing.
Yeah, the actor does what he's supposed to. He is kind of funny, especially later in the movie. Like he is goofy, but. There are things I would have done differently with that character. I do like the idea of having a second conductor. Like, I do really like the idea, especially a second younger conductor. I really like that idea. Mm-hmm. But it's not really explored in here very much. Besides, he goes to Mr. Conductor's to get some gold dust. He doesn't find it initially. Lily waits there. No one shows up for her. And then she ends up getting taken back to her grandpa because she got off at the wrong stop.
Yep. Stacy brings her back to her grandpa, who's saying goodbye to a motorcyclist. Hello, the only appearance of P.T. Boomer left in the movie.
Yep, because that would have been very important, as well as a lot of this conversation would have been really important if there were a villain in the human world.
I have to know, what was his original purpose in that scene?
He was arguing with him.
I was going to say, he was arguing. He was basically, I don't know how else to say it, except it's a Charles Xavier Magneto-esque moment where they just look at each other like, I'm going to find that engine.
Yeah.
I'm going to destroy that engine, and you can't stop me. And he just goes, your stop's that way.
Yeah. Wow. It's one of those where they legitimately would have been, like, it would have set up, and it would make sense why our character by Peter Fonda is so sad, because he is trying to protect something that really can't protect, honestly.
Yeah, that would make his emotion make a lot more sense.
Yep. Lily is told, Stacy says, I wish you'd come back to Shining Time at some point.
Yeah, because she says, I wish earlier and stops. I always interpret it as that's not what she actually wanted to say.
Yeah.
We never find out what she actually wanted to say. So.
Unfortunately, Shining Time Station is just kind of there to move the plot along and be like, for me to be like, ooh, Shining Time Station, because it really is just kind of there. Yeah. And as cool as it is having her back in that role, she's just kind of there.
Yeah, that is a good way to describe Shining Time Station in this movie, is that it's just kind of there, which is why I think, as I mentioned earlier, that it would have been better to either shift the focus more on Sodor or, you know what would have been interesting is if they didn't make it like, oh, these are like two completely different places, Shining Time Station and Sodor. They made it as like they're both in the same place.
That kind of is honestly, you know, when they've set up now there, but that kind of is how I felt it a lot of times growing up at Shining Time, is that they were the only connection to it. It was the only connecting point to it, so it kind of was in both places. That almost Harry Potter, that you like have to go through train station in Sodor.
No,
nine and three quarters.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of meant more that like Shining Time and Sodor are both two separate locations in the same like world.
Yeah. Like Shining Time is just another stop, like
Yes.
Well, that's I say again.
Now, if that was the case, I mean, the entire movie wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
So. That is true. It would have been a very different movie.
I just wish, because they're setting up with the Magic Railroad is more of the connection between the two, and it kind of takes away kind of Shining Times, just there is a railway station in the real world where Mr. Conductor lives. Like, that's, instead of being kind of that place where you have, it is in both worlds, and it is a station in both worlds where both trains stop at, that I've always kind of felt like it was.
Mm-hmm.
But what, you know, it's fine. It is definitely, I love seeing Shinetown Station. It made me happy, so there is that at least.
That's fair.
We get some eerie train toots in the night.
Trains that go toot in the night.
That's what we hear. Yeah. Percy and Thomas are talking, and they're like, there's this place with bumpers, and I think that might be the entrance to the Magic Railroad.
The magic buffers. Don't tell anyone about it. Toby walks up. Yeah, Diesel heard everything.
Yeah. Diesel, Toby's like, but I'll go investigate. Don't worry, I got this.
Yeah, I love Toby here. Toby might be one of my favorite characters in the movie because he so doesn't give a shit. He's like, Diesel won't mess with an old engine like me. He doesn't think I'm a threat. Dumbass.
He doesn't think I'm very useful.
Yep. And we get Pinchy going wild in this, which is his
little grabby thing. Which made me wonder, like, is Pinchy like a separate entity that's just attached to Diesel 10? Or
the way I interpreted it is Diesel 10 is crazy, and some of his crazy leaks out into, like, he thinks that Pinchy is his own thing, and it's kind of his separate, like...
Okay. I like that.
That's kind of the way I did it. That's
funny.
That's what I'm betting it is.
We have Henry needing special coal, so Thomas is going to go get the special coal for Henry.
It's six trucks, and then one ends up falling into the magic
bridge. Diesel 10, when Pinchy attacks, it collapses everything on it, so Diesel 10 is kind of taken out of commission for a little while. That's
right. Which, fun fact, by this point, Henry had crashed the Flying Kipper, which means he would have been rebuilt and not needed special coal anymore. This movie's continuity is ruined. Fuck this shit. 0 out of 10.
Canon ruined. Thomas goes and collects the trucks of special coal. One is missing. Birdie has two moments. His earlier moment when he wants Thomas to race with him, and Thomas is like, no, I gotta go find the conductor. And he's like, well, does that mean I win?
Yeah, and then this one where he's like, hey, Thomas, you and your five cars. Oh.
Oh, no.
Not a lot really happens for a little while, but Thomas decides to go off again to go find Mr. Conductor, and he leaves Annie and Clarabella.
It's like, don't worry, Percy will be back to get you. We've heard that before.
Percy, protect.
It's Annie and Clarabella's only line, but it is a good line.
It's very good.
It's very funny. I never thought that Annie and Clarabella spoke. I never remembered them speaking.
Yeah, they do. There's multiple times. Actually, I think in the first episode, I think technically they have lines.
Yeah, because they're like, oh, Tom. I'm paraphrasing here, obviously. Thomas is a dick to Gordon. And they're like, oh, Thomas, why you got to be a dick to Gordon?
I thought that was the actual line. Anyways.
So, Diesel 10 catches the conductor and attempts to murder him.
Goes to throw him off a bridge.
Was my favorite scene as a kid. This was my first Mission Impossible. Mr. Conductor has these pliers that can cut Diesel 10's exhaust hose, but Diesel 10 shakes and he drops them and he has to grab them. He has to...
Mm-hmm. He also, when they get to the bridge, he goes, this is the bridge for my dream.
Yep. This is where we see Chekhov's bridge.
Which it was in his dream, but it was in his dream when he was asleep in a field. Why was he asleep in a field anyway?
Nobody worries. So when he cuts the exhaust, he gets launched.
It's literally three frames, it feels like. And Mr. Conductor is just tossed like a goddamn beanbag.
But he crashes at the windmill. And he starts to see secret as there's writing on it. And he's uncovering the gold dust secret.
Before this, we do get the lamest payoff in this movie as Thomas
was dumped. Because he says very early on in the movie, by the way, you're going to help us with this movie. And it's like, the audience is going to help. How? He lands on these bags and he's like, did you put these there for me? And it's like, no, we didn't. We didn't do shit.
We didn't. Yeah, they were just there.
Yeah, don't worry. I did that.
I love it if Junior was there with him and he's like, did you put the bags there? And Junior's like, the fuck are you talking to?
Or no, he's like, Junior's like, I put the bags there because I don't believe you.
So Patch and Lily hang out.
Yeah.
Get on a horse and they are going to ride to Shinetown.
Yeah, because, again, it's like two scenes here, but in the original cut, Lily was the narrator. She was telling the whole story, and it was going to end by revealing Lily and Patch were married.
Mm-hmm.
Which would have been cute, but also I was like, okay.
Yeah. Burnett, we get another scene of Burnett essentially caressing Lady.
Like every goddamn scene.
Just, there's okay, so many scenes of us going back to him, and he's just like, oh, one day you'll be fine.
One day you'll get
out of here. We will ride into the hills again one day.
We'll be together.
Again, Peter Fonda is giving his all in these scenes. They're the same scene.
Yeah.
They're good, well done scenes. It's just, it's the same scene.
The same scene on the same set. He was just like, I will only do this movie if for 90% of the movie I am on this one set.
And I can caress the train.
I can caress the train.
All right. Lily runs into Junior again, this time wearing conductor clothes that he clearly stole from Mr. Conductor.
He has
gold dust, and he's going to share some of it.
Yep.
It's not like it's the last of it.
Yeah, you know, we got plenty to go around, don't we?
You know, it's fine. It's like oil. It's fine. And they go to Sodor. It's one of the only bits of the movie where the green screen's a little wonky.
Mm-hmm. When they're riding on no train.
Yeah. They're right. And they get to Sodor, and Thomas is like, Mr. Conductor, is that you, Caesar Jr.? Oh,
what does he say? Oh, Bunko?
Yeah, oh, Bunko.
Ah, Bunko, it's Junior. But there is a scene here that literally is the best scene in this movie, is when they get there, she walks up over the hill, and you see all the trains just driving around, and that is literally...
That's a trailer shot, like Sean said.
That is my favorite shot in this movie. It is so cool to see her, a human, looking over and seeing all the Thomas trains driving around.
It's your dream.
It is literally it is my favorite shot in this movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sean said it perfectly when we were watching the movie. Yeah, that's a trailer shot.
And then they get to live my dream, and they ride on Thomas. And Thomas takes them to Mr. Conductor.
Which you never did tell you out with Thomas. Thomas, I was 26.
When they get to there, Sir Topham Hatt calls and Junior answers.
Yeah, and that's another scene. Again, that's why I do like Junior and Mr. Conductor's chemistry, because he's just...
Oh, yeah.
He's just fucking with him.
I wish that we had more of a setup than it's just my plucky cousin.
I get that.
There's just a lot... Surprise, this movie has trouble with its setup because, God forbid, 30 minutes is cut out.
Yeah, it's not like 30 minutes cut.
And they reshot things and they moved things around and they changed things. And so
we should really stop asking questions of things that happened.
Then Junior gets on the windmill, it spins around and yeets him to Diesel 10.
Diesel 10.
He gets Baldur's Gate 3.
He goes right on the Diesel 10 and... Something I do like, a little bit of character thing here, is that when Mr. Conductor was on Diesel 10, he was terrified. Mm-hmm. When Junior's on Diesel 10, he's like, I'm going to surf on you, bitch.
And Diesel 10's like, well, I have a plan for you.
Yep.
Congrats. You can't get away, can you? Oh, no. So then we have a quick scene. It's just really cool model work. It's Percy. He sees the two other Diesels.
It's nighttime. It's foggy.
It's great work. Yeah. Basically, it's entirely there to say, hey, they know where the entrance is.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really result in anything, but they do know where the entrance
really,
is.
Really, but now they know where it is.
Yeah. Almost like they would relay that to a human on the other side.
There's that telemark again.
We also have... Here's another one of those moments where I had to ask, why, creators? The tumbleweed talks. And Thomas is like, it's just Percy, you know? That's just Percy in his head.
That's what I genuinely thought. I was like, oh, it's just Percy, like, being paranoid. But then it comes back later, and I'm like... Okay, so no, the tumbleweed can't just talk. Why now?
Yeah, it is very weird. I don't know why.
Why is it southern?
Percy's like, oh,
they're
dear.
All British. Why is it southern?
Oh, dear. Oh, my. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, no. They know. Okay, I'm going to go away now.
Doesn't the talking tumbleweed sound like it's something that would be in a Muppet movie?
It does.
Specifically in the Muppet movie when they're in that Western area,
fixed if it was that Keanu Reeves tumbleweed from the third SpongeBob movie.
Yeah. They camp by Thomas. We get a lot more exposition about the magic railway and stuff. That's pretty...
You're right, but it's funny.
Just and stuff.
Yeah. And they're like, to the real world.
Oh shit, we can't go there. The movie cuts to the real world. Once again, showing Bernard Stone in his depressed fucking cave, in his fucking depression cave.
But don't worry, Thomas. He knows where the magic railway is.
Yep,
Lily's gonna ride with him, and we're off to the magic railway.
This is I don't remember if we're at that scene yet, but when they go into the magic railway, it is. far and away one of the best musical cues in the movie.
It is so good.
It's the orchestral version of it. He's a really useful actor. That's when they exit it, to be fair, but it's in the same.
The thing about this is, unfortunately, for a show that has some very iconic little themes, the music is kind of forgetful at times in this movie. Now, they have cutaway actual musical numbers, which I think are all really good.
They have songs like music that play in the background, and I like almost
all. But almost all of the soundtrack is kind of forgetful.
Mm-hmm. One of the songs almost makes me cry exclusively because of nostalgia, so yeah.
Thomas gets to the real world, and Lily jumps off to go run to her grandpa, and Thomas, oh no!
Guess what else was in the original cut that caused that? That's right, P.T. Boomer!
Yep. It is very weird. Like, it just collapses like someone else was there, wasn't it?
Because P.T. Boomer blew it up with dynamite.
We go back to Sodor. Diesel 10 has launched Junior onto James and is now threatening to melt them.
One of the only scenes, I'd argue one of the only scenes in the movie where Diesel 10 is actually threatening.
It's one of the only scary things they kept.
Yeah, because he's straight up threatening to kill them. He's pushing James closer and closer to the smelter's pit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a really cool
scene. Basically, Junior has the last of the gold dust and he uses it up.
To save him and James.
And basically lands there with Mr. Conductor and he's like, good seeing you, James. What just, okay.
James kind of leaves, like, his line is like, okay, see you later. I would have had James' line be, what?
A lot of this happened. And I think a lot of this is that the other in this, as much as this movie is a Thomas movie, there are a lot of times where it is not really a Thomas movie.
No.
The trains are just there to deliver.
One of the main issues with them.
Deliver messages or just be like, huh? Turns out Lady needs coal, and they now have special coal, so Patch, go get those special coal.
Yep, alright, cool.
And Burnett is he is not at all convinced that he can do it, because of the crash years earlier, he's like, I can't do it, I can't, it's not in my bones anymore.
I can't do Sodor anymore, it all ended.
I can't go back!
And, but he can! He can go back!
And he does. This is also where we get Thomas going down the hill.
Right? That was when he fell down the hill.
He falls down the hill and goes into the Magic Railroad because there was another hidden plot earlier. There's another hidden line that you only see for a split second on a map.
Of course.
Yeah, because they talk about what are these lines?
Yeah, they talk about what are these lines.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Billy had some use.
because kids are going to pay attention to that. It's one of another complaint, but I don't mind it because obviously.
Yeah.
I loved it as a kid, but I will admit, for a kid's movie, this is a very complicated
plot. I also, when he went down, I said, I was like, wait, there's another Magic Railroad? And Thomas was like, remember the map? Oh, yeah, the map. That's right.
Yeah, the map, yeah.
Is
a kid going to be like, oh, yeah, the map?
I mean,
for like 3 seconds.
I mean, I imagine, like, if you're a kid, you're probably watching this with your parents, like, what happened? And the parents, if they haven't been bored out of their minds in their seats, probably like the other map.
You have to shake them.
Gets a face. Lady, as we go into the Magic Railroad, gets a face.
Which was very funny because Sean was talking about earlier, like, how I would do a Thomas movie is in the real world they don't have face, and so what do they do? And I was just like, wait.
But I guess it's because Lady doesn't have magic, but, like, Thomas came into the real world and kept his face.
But he has the magic.
He has the magic coal.
This is one of two scenes that almost makes me cry, and not even for nostalgia. This is just a wonderfully delivered line by Peter Fonda. All the tunnel goes green. All the Magic Railroad goes green. And he leans down and goes, the light's green for you, lady. And it's like, that's such a good goddamn line.
That is a really good line.
And it's delivered well. Like, it is such a good line.
What's he say after that? Like, green for victory or something?
Yeah.
Green for glory.
Green for glory, that's right.
So good. So good.
You know,
would have had even better payoff if they were doing it after running away from a villain. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, you say that, but in this climax that we're coming up to, P.T. Boomer was on Diesel.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That they're going in, I assume, chasing P.T. Boomer is where.
No.
Would he have gone in first, or would they go in first?
I believe he went in first, but then the chase would happen where he's trying to kill Thomas and Lady, mm-hmm. and he would have been on Diesel 10.
Yep. And that's what we get to. Splodge, come and destroy.
Nah.
Nah, I don't think so.
I feel like it.
We do get...
Just me, Lady.
Look, I know that they're model trains and they're on tracks and, you know, you can only do chases so well. Honestly, they did a really good job shooting this chase here. Yeah, this chase,
it's a very good climax.
It does have, you know, you can see how far away they are. You can, you know, oh gosh, you know, Pinchy could grab Thomas at any point.
Mr. Conductor.
Lady is a slower train, so like it is, you do feel a little bit of the tension. It's a well shot presented, especially with the models.
I do think they could have done this would have required like some very tricky stuff with the model work, but I think there is a way they could have like ramped up the intensity a little bit, like having them like going around the turn so fast they go on like,
a little bit of that is, or having that you maybe know that the tracks are going from two to one.
Mm-hmm.
it's something they would do honestly better later in the CGI era, because mm-hmm. in a lot of the CGI movies there's a chase climax because hey, that's what you can do with
you can do that more with this, and
especially Sodor, Legend of the Lost Treasure has a phenomenal one. So.
Lady crosses the bridge. It starts crumbling more. Thomas, but he gets across, and
it's the payoff for Chekhov's bridge.
It barely keeps way for Thomas. Peter Fonda yells, "Well done, Thomas! Well done." I honestly, I don't know why, but I really like that line. It's just nice.
It's very nice.
It is very nice. I questioned it at first because I was like, well, Thomas didn't really do anything except go across the bridge. But he got across the bridge.
When there is literally just metal rails and nothing below it.
And Thomas, how the hell did Thomas get across?
Because he's a fucking tank engine. He's lighter.
Anyway, he went fast, got through. You saw how it bends.
Yeah, it bends. It's like all about to break. Plus, this hopefully will be the second to last one. In this chase, when Diesel 10 says, now I'll get you Burnett Stone, and Burnett Stone goes, no, you won't, because the magic you refuse to believe in will get the better of you. Who do you think originally had that line?
I don't know.
Boomer.
Oh, okay.
Because they would be talking back and forth.
And then...
It is really cool that Burnett is driving Lady. He has confidence again, you know?
Yeah, again, kind of...
We finally get a friggin' smile from him.
Again, kind of giving way to, like, is he supposed to be the main character?
The movie's never sure who's the main character. Diesel 10 does fall off the bridge, lands in a barge.
Again, BT... This one's just a self-explanatory. P.T. Boomer was supposed to fall with him.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to end up in the barge. It would have been very funny if they just fucking killed him. But no, he was going to end up in the barge.
They go back and they discovered the secret of gold dust.
Magical engine shavings and water, because sure.
Yeah, because why not?
Why not? It's as good of an explanation as anything. They have their gold dust. They get to go back.
Yep, and that's...
That's the movie.
Yeah, that's basically the movie. There's not a lot of wrap-up.
We have a little wrap-up of things are good, fine in Shiny Time, which, again, if you had the villain there, it would make sense why Shiny Time is the wrap-up.
Yeah, and Shatapamat says, now we can all go home just like Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
And he rides off into the sunset.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We also have a brief shot of Mr. Conductor feeding his plant flower food, and he pulls out an ice cream cone.
As you do. Because I guess he was feeding his
no notes. Perfect.
Junior left it in there.
The funny thing is, like, he's putting the flower food into it, and he's like, looks at it, goes, and he's just got this face of, what?
Something we did miss. Mr. Conductor, I don't think gives up his duties, but he's like, hey, there's another railway. Gives his hat to Junior.
Mm-hmm.
Junior's ready to accept the responsibility. Junior puts it on. Junior puts his hat on sideways because he's a fucking nerd.
Yeah.
Because he's from the 90s. He's totally radical, dude.
And the movie ends.
No, he's not.
And the movie ends with a beautiful song.
And then
Locomotion.
The Locomotion, which
I was going to say, and then Locomotion.
I didn't bring it up over off you, but that played, and I was like, oh my god, really?
I enjoyed it,
that's
though.
That's a little on the nose, isn't it?
It's a
don't
mid...
Don't you like a movie about cars with the song Life is a Highway as the main theme?
Anyway,
it's a mid-credit song. I don't care. Like, a mid-credit song plays, any song can play. I'm perfectly fine.
And we do get another cover. The song that almost makes me cry because of nostalgia is Shining Time. This is your Shining Time.
Mm-hmm.
We get a cover by a female artist. I forget who was supposed to be the original one. Because, again, originally Lily was supposed to be the narrator.
Yep. The movie's messy. That's the best way to say it, Assembly. The movie is messy.
The movie is a messy... movie that's not very good, and I love every fucking
Here's the thing. I will even push back a little bit on the not very good thing. I do understand. Even if I take away the nostalgia and the love for Thomas, I think it's that I see the good movie consistently, the good things in there, and maybe I'm in all of the technical aspects of things. Maybe there's other things. But I do still see what they're trying to do. It's just, it's very messy, so I can understand why a lot of people would not review this kindly. I can see it because of all those things. I just am able to overlook and see a lot of what they were trying to do and a lot of the stuff and enjoy it.
It's similar in a way, very odd question. It's similar to The Dark Crystal. I know that movie's not the best movie in the world plot-wise. It's a very generic plot. But I give all the credit in the world because of the technical aspects, and I can overlook it because of these technical aspects and the great world it creates.
There is a good movie in here somewhere. If anybody finds it, let me know.
I think that's the thing that
where
yeah. I think that's the thing where the three of us have a little bit different is like Thomas and I can kind of find the good movie in there. We have to dig a bit. We have to look, and we sometimes have to put on some serious nostalgic goggles.
Oh yeah,
but we can find it. Mason really wasn't able to find it.
I will acknowledge that, like, somewhere deep in here is a well-made movie. And I think maybe, you know, if you add the other 30 minutes into it, or if you cut out a different 30 minutes, it would click for me. It's just this version of this film does not click
I
for
think,
me. I can imagine another version of this movie.
This will lead great into our questions, but I think the biggest thing is they cut the 30 minutes out and didn't put a new 30 minutes back in. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yes.
And I think it's honestly was kind of a bias at the time where, like, kids' movies can't be over an hour and a half as well.
Yeah.
Which is stupid.
Yeah. And again, I have no problem with an hour and a half movie. Like, I think you can tell the story tightly, and I think if they had maybe cut a little bit down before, like, got down.
I think there is a way to tell this story in an hour and a half. This is just, even though I do like the movie, this isn't the way to tell.
No. Because it feels more like they cut stuff out and didn't fix the things that they cut out. They said, well, the story will be fine without these things. Yeah, and unfortunately,
I imagine that was probably because it was a very late thing. Yeah, the movie was basically done.
Yeah. So that will lead us perfectly into our first question we ask of every film that we watch. How does it hold up?
You guys answer first. I still need
to. I can answer pretty good. Technically, it holds up great. As Thomas said, there's really only one scene where the green screen looks a little wonky. The green screens look good. The model work is great. The shots where you have humans and trains together and models, I think, are fantastic. It feels the magic there. It pulls it all together. Technically, it holds up incredibly. Story-wise and some of the themes don't always hold up on watch. Acting holds up outstandingly. Like, legitimately, the acting is good in this movie. They know what they're doing. There are things. It is a messy movie. So I think there are things that hold up great in this movie, and there are things that just fall apart because – but I don't think any of that is necessarily – they probably fell apart when you watched it in 2000 in a theater.
And that's what I'm about to say. I've said it before. This movie holds up perfectly – because I'm pretty sure the exact same problems it had back then are the exact same problems it has now.
Yeah.
And nothing
nothing has really aged badly about this.
No,
movie. There's nothing that has aged badly.
There's no badly timed joke that you're like, ooh, that's not going to age well. There's no weird – there's really nothing in this that I feel like this could come out tomorrow and I'd be like, yeah, that's still a modern movie, you know.
The issue, again, it's the same problems it had back then. It's that story and the jumbled mess that it ended up becoming.
And I think – it also is at a time where CGI was becoming prevalent. And so, like, there's a lot of elements that it does. I think Mason, when we finished it, said, that movie feels like an early 90s movie in a lot of ways because of that. And I think that's because at the time, as CGI is prevalent, it does feel kind of like it's an older movie, even when it came out.
And I think that that's, like, my thing with this question is that, like, it is a very well-made 90s movie. Like, I can, like, that's just for me, like, this feels like a product of the 90s, and it doesn't feel to me, at least, that this could have been made at any time,
even though it came out July 2000.
Fun fact,
the day we're recording this is July 25th. Guess what the anniversary of this movie is? July 24th.
Ah.
Or no, it's
yeah,
is this the 25th today?
26th day.
It's 26th. Okay, well, the anniversary is the 25th.
Yeah. Okay. So we were real close to watching it on the anniversary, but yeah, I think we all kind of summed it up there. Like, it has flaws. It has very apparent flaws, but I think that none of them are because it doesn't hold up.
Yes.
So, our second question we ask of every film that we watch. What can modern films, or just films in general, what can they take from this?
Model work.
As simple as that.
Like, the model work in this movie is fucking stellar.
Model work, yeah. And I think it takes something very similar. I've watched a lot of behind the scenes on, like, the original Star Wars trilogy and what they did with models and how they brought people in and matte painting. Same things with, like, the Indiana Jones movies. And this movie really does a great job with model work and green screen work. Mm-hmm. And that's an art that we just don't see as much anymore because it's all fixed in post. Yes. It's all fixed in CG post. And I am not one that'll come on and rag on CGI. That's never going to be something that I do.
It's a tool.
It's a tool that's used at everything on that. But there are other tools you can use.
The thing, CGI.
They're just time consuming.
CGI is exactly that. It's a tool. But it's a tool that you can get overly reliant on.
And
that's kind of my issue.
I think, like, yeah.
I don't care. Obviously, you got to CGI the Hulk and Thanos duking it out because that wouldn't look as good on models. You have to CGI, you know, Deadpool getting his heart ripped out and growing back. You have to CGI all that shit. But a lot of times it's like, yeah, well, CGI a bear. Why do you have to CGI the bear? You don't need to CGI the bear. Just get a fucking bear.
Just get a bear. I think it's like I brought it up. CGI is a tool, but I think more and more it's being used as a crutch.
I do kind of agree on it, but here this is where I'll push back on this, and I think this is what my take from this is. Movies take time.
Yes.
And when we had things like model work and things like this, we knew that it was going to be a multi-year investment in the effects of a movie.
Yes.
Modern movies, especially using CGI, studios expect that to be a 2 or 3 month job. But where do we see the best CGI is when it has year and time to make that CGI look good. Movies take time. And this movie, for all of its flaws and all things on it, was lovingly crafted over years.
Yes. Yes.
And that is something that is lost a lot of the time in these sort of in movies like this. And, you know, we do apparently have at least pre-production / greenlit Thomas movie out there.
Did you guys ever read the original? Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys ever know what the original script for the 2010 Adventures of Thomas movie was?
I feel like
we've talked about it.
I feel like I looked it up before, but I don't remember it. But.
World War II.
Yeah, that's right. World War II.
Advice, if any person wants my advice to a giant studio that just made Barbie and is going to make Mattel's Thomas the Tank Engine in the future, take your time. Whether that's you go back to some more model work or you do all CGI, I don't care. Make it look good. Take time. Give us some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful things to look at, because I will always look at Thomas the Tank Engine like a little kid, and if it has taken time, I can look at it like that again.
Take your time, and kind of going into this isn't my thing, and this can really apply to any movie, and this has been kind of like the overarching theme of this episode. Know what to edit. Know what to keep. Know what to throw away. You gotta know what, if cuts need to be made, know what to cut.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's, you know, that's a studio thing. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we never have gotten the original cut or a director's cut from this, because that a lot of times fixes those messed up edited movies. Daredevil, the theatrical cut is not as good as the director's cut, fixes a lot of the issues. Punisher.
Oh, Jesus.
Fixes a lot of the issues because there was a vision, and unfortunately because of test audiences or studios, it gets cut down and changed.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always mean the director's cut is good. There have been many director's cut that I go, woof! Eek.
That, wait, really? But yeah.
Yeah, but...
That was your vision? Oh!
Good thing you had some intervention.
I liked it when you were blind.
But that is true. Editing is so... This movie is a note to a lot of the important things of filmmaking that sometimes get overlooked.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's Thomas and the Magic Railroad. We had so much fun watching it and talking about it and getting to do more Thomas stuff. Look forward to tons of stuff from Thomas on our Patreon, on our YouTube. I think this is the only thing we're going to put on the main channel, but, you know, if anything else does, you can type an email to bleepyouplane@gmail.com and be like, Sean, you said there was only going to be one thing. How dare you?
You lied.
But we're really excited to be able to celebrate Thomas and kind of its first and only at this point real attempt at a big movie. And this was fun. So look forward to more stuff from us and season 4 just around the corner.
Yay. So
we'll be back next time.